Welcome to Behind the Story, a program where we take you straight to the source. In the coming days, students from area school districts will be wrapping up their schoolwork with their eager eyes set on summer. These are students across McLennan County, from the Waco, Midway, and Robinson districts, to name a few. And in this episode of Behind the Story, we'll take a look at the past school year and some of the different stories that KWBU has done on education. Our first stop, Midway ISD. At several of the district's 11 campuses, you can find a so-called makerspace. And just like the name suggests, these spaces are designed to reinforce hands-on learning. But they're not quite the workshop class of years past. Yeah, there are tools and a workbench, but there's also a lot of high-tech gear.
I want the light one.
Inside the library at Spiegelville Elementary, about 15 kindergartners gather around a table for an activity. The children are working against the backdrop of familiar library fixtures, a collection of world book encyclopedias, A to Z, reading nooks, and a 3D printer. That's right, a 3D printer, as well as a wooden workbench filled with tools like hammers, screwdrivers, and pliers. And don't forget the tub full of kid-friendly wires and circuits. These hands-on materials are popping up in school and community libraries across the country as the so-called makerspace movement takes hold. Christy Hancock, a teacher and librarian at Spiegelville, who applied for a $4,000 grant to create the makerspace, explains.
Makerspaces are, it's kind of a maker movement where people are making things with their hands. And especially in schools, this is a great way for kids to actually learn what's going on rather than somebody telling them how it's working. They get to make it work themselves. And they remember it better. It becomes a part of their learning.
Makerspaces, Hancock adds, are also a way to encourage more of a do-it-yourself ethos where children teach themselves, learning through trial and error. Apart from the location at Spiegelville's library, Midway ISD is currently renovating other spaces on its campuses. This includes a $10,000 maker-type space called a collaboration station at Woodgate Intermediate School and a $325,000 renovation of Midway Middle School's library, which will also include the creation of a makerspace. The funding for these projects has been fueled by some of the $1.4 million remaining from a nearly $35 million bond voters passed in 2013. Seth Hansen is the executive director of technology for Midway ISD. He says these spaces, like the one at Spiegelville and the active learning space at Midway Intermediate, are a supplement to traditional classroom education.
They really challenge our kids to think in maybe more non-traditional ways about how to build things, how to make things. You know, we have there's a huge focus right now in the United States on STEM education and science, technology, engineering, and math, and makerspaces really meet that need. And they deliver a lot of different materials and opportunities for our students to learn, to be creative, and to really make.
I think that's it.
Back at Spiegelville, students are doing just that. Five-year-old Brianne Gleaves and Jadarian Evans are working together to figure out just how circuits work. It's the day's assignment, and they're working with kid-friendly circuits called Little Bits. The students have connected a blue bit, a battery source, with a green bit, an output module. When connected, the battery powers a little fan on the green component and causes it to spin. As the students continue to build and tinker with how it all works, you can see the literal and figurative gears beginning to move. Gleaves relates the day's assignment with some familiar items she uses at school and at home.
Electricity can transform to the stuff like TVs, the computers in our computer lab, and mommy and daddy's computer because we have two computers at home again.
Although these maker spaces look and sound a bit different from the conventional library, where a sign encouraging students to be quiet might be posted, they foster and encourage creativity and learning all the same. That's according to research from the University of Oklahoma, which recently studied a specific makerspace site in the state. Students at this location, much like the one at Spiegelville and across Midway ISD, worked outside the traditional education model, where teachers and textbooks instruct them. Here in this space, students really do make their own solutions. Before we move on to our next story, we'll hear more from Seth Hansen, Executive Director of Technology for Midway ISD. Seth, can you tell me a little bit about creating makerspaces and bringing all this tech to Midway ISD?
Yeah, I think what's really cool about this project here at Woodgate Intermediate School is we have created an active learning space where kids can come in, they can collaborate together, they can adjust the space to their needs. So it might be a group of two working, but it might also be a group of six. They can move the furniture, work together, the surfaces are writable. They're able to collaborate, share with each other, bounce ideas off of each other, and then transition into maybe another lesson. They're also able to display all of their work through technology. And so whether that be a full class setting with a large screen TV or a smaller setting with a smaller group with the monitors that are available to them on the wall. And I think it brings a different idea of learning. It changes the mindset of I'm at my desk by myself to a mindset of I've got peers that I can work with and also change the room to meet my needs to whatever I need to do. So,
you know, that customization is even right down to the chairs. I was talking to some sixth graders earlier, and one told me she had a wiggle chair and her partner had a regular chair. It just seems that you can make changes to really meet the individual needs of these kids. So with all that in mind, what is it about those different factors and customization points that really attracted you to bring the makerspace to Midway ISD?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a lot of research done by a variety of different people, different companies, and partnerships with universities about how furniture and design thinking can change the classroom. And you read that research and you kind of come to find out that students owning their own space and creating their own learning environment based on the design of the classroom really increases learning and it increases the effectiveness of the learning that happens. So it also, you know, meets a lot of different types of learning styles. We talk about a kinesthetic learning style. Students are up and able to be moving around or even in their seats with the wiggle chairs to be able to wiggle around, and there are some different sensory applications that happen in the classroom. And so I think that those sorts of approaches, and a little bit different than the traditional classroom, that's what attracted us to see what this concept might be like in a repurposed computer lab where maybe we don't have as much use for anymore. And let's see how we can create this as a dynamic learning space as opposed to maybe a traditional computer lab.
It seems like from the students I talked with that it's a model the students are really accepting of and warming up to.
I've been really impressed, even with just today, talking with some of the kids and sharing about their love for the space, but not just the love for the space, but the things that they've done in the space. And I think we do have to be realistic in that the teacher's approach to the class matters a lot. And so we have incredible teachers at our school that are challenging our students with their curriculum, with their ideas, with the lessons that they give them. And so without that, we still wouldn't have what we have today. And we've got great teachers and a great facility here for our students to learn together.
Earlier, I was at Spiegelville Elementary, and they were working with Little Bits, these kid-friendly circuits, and it was all a supplement to what they were learning about in the classroom.
Yeah, in this sense, it is a supplement, and really, it's kind of a testing ground too for us. I mean, if we do see this being a successful model, it might be something that we expand to more traditional classrooms. But I think you see these kind of spaces, active learning spaces. You see these maker spaces, like you mentioned at Spiegelville. And our upcoming middle school, we'll be redoing our middle school to combine both of these kind of thoughts of an active learning space with a makerspace together to create a pretty amazing space in and of itself. And that's coming online this summer. But makerspaces are great too. You mentioned that at Spiegelville because they really challenge our kids to think in maybe more non-traditional ways about how to build things, how to make things. You know, we have there's a huge focus right now in the United States on STEM education and science, technology, engineering, and math, and makerspaces really meet that need. And they deliver a lot of different materials and opportunities for our students to learn, to be creative, and to really make. And that's what the whole goal of that is.
Now, will the space here at Woodgate be open to other schools in the Midway District?
This space itself is really geared towards Woodgate Intermediate, the students at this campus itself. But again, it's kind of a model that we're trying out in cooperation with our Education Foundation, with our technology department, to try to help fund this project. And from there, if it is successful, we'll start seeing, you know, these different types of spaces pop up in all of our schools.
And once Midway Middle's library is renovated to include a makerspace area, the kids in the district will have access to makerspace stations at the elementary, intermediary, and middle school levels.
I think we're seeing a big push in a lot of our different schools with makerspaces in particular. And I think we'll start seeing more pushes in these flexible or active learning spaces. The makerspace, you're right, the continuation piece of it is nice because at the end of the day, we don't want it to just be some novel thing that you go into, wow, cool, this is awesome. You do a makerspace, you know, lesson a couple times and you're done. We want it to be incorporated into our curriculum. We want our students to see the depth and breadth that you can have with a makerspace and with the lessons surrounding that, as well as these active learning spaces. So it's not just a, you know, this is so much fun and then we go back to our normal classroom, but or go to the new school. It's a continuation from elementary to intermediate here, middle school, and then high school. We have different classes and things that meet a lot of those different makerspace needs. But I think we'll see it expand in our district.
Now, Seth, how exactly was the makerspace here funded?
This was funded through a partnership with our campus instructional technology specialist here, in cooperation with our GT teachers, wrote a grant to our local education foundation. And the education foundation goes through a grant review process. They loved this idea and they approved it. And then our technology department also helped in purchasing the different technology components outside of the Education Foundation, along with some of the furniture. So,
you know, the clear ostensible differences between the elementary makerspace and this one here at the intermediate school is the intermediate one is a bit more digitally inclined with computers and things like that. So is that difference just because the kids are older and you're adjusting to working with a different age group?
I don't think so. I think what we really are talking about at our elementary school, they're blended concepts, but this is really focused on, this space can really be used for anything, honestly. This could be a makerspace if you brought little bits and you brought some of the different making technologies and if you brought the crafts into this room. This is a really flexible room to be whatever you want it to be. The makerspace was really geared towards, I think, making, and you've got different themes and topics you can go into. You can look at, you know, audiovisual stuff. You can look at building engineering with Legos or circuitry with little bits or crafting, sewing machines, you know, and then combining those things together. So I think they're kind of two separate things, but they can also be combined to kind of be together in the same space. And that's kind of what we're doing at the middle school.
That was Seth Hansen, the Executive Director of Technology for Midway ISD. Now we'll head to a charter school here in town. The Harmony School System has nearly 50 campuses throughout Texas, and here in Waco, the Harmony Science Academy has had a robotics team participate in an international competition for the last several years. This past March, the team, which is a mixture of freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, took the robot they designed and built from scratch to the annual For Inspiration and Recognition of Science, or FIRST, Robotics Competition. It's a competition that sees more than 3,000 teams from across the world participate, each with just 6 weeks to design, build, and program their robot. Inside Harmony Science Academy, the Devastators, a team of students from the school, are showing off Impulse, the robot they've designed for the first robotics competition, or FRC. Here, Impulse, which kind of looks like a much smaller and squatter version of the Mars Curiosity rover, is zipping across the cafeteria floor. It's powered by a drivetrain system that controls the 8 wheels it sits on. It also uses a smaller system of wheels to pick up balls, which a series of air tanks launches into the air. All of these features, says senior Safiq Sindha, will help the team to effectively compete in this year's FRC.
The challenge changes every year. This year is a medieval theme called Stronghold. So what we have to do is essentially shoot what we call boulders or 10-inch balls into goals that are 10 feet high. 7 feet high, excuse me, 7 feet high, all while defending ourselves against other players and things like that.
The game is played in alliances, or groups made up of three different teams. The beginning of each match starts with 15 seconds, where the robot is completely autonomous. Sindha says this is to test the team's programming capabilities. From there, it's a furious match that lasts 2 minutes and 15 seconds. A video released by FIRST explains more.
Welcome to the FIRST Robotics Competition and the 2016 Tournament Challenge, FIRST Stronghold. The Alliance quest is to breach the opponent's defenses, known as the Outer Works, weaken their tower with boulders, and capture it.
But designing, building, and programming a robot to do all of this wasn't easy, says the team. The Devastators, like all of the roughly 3,000 other teams that compete, had to not only build their robot, but also raise money for it and design a team brand. In total, the team raised about $23,000 through grants and sponsorships. A large portion of this sum will go towards travel expenses. But when it comes to parts, each team can only spend $5,000 for their robot. However, if a sponsor, say a sheet metal shop, wanted to cut and donate metal to a team, that wouldn't count towards the $5,000 cap. Devastators head coach and teacher Tiffany Cortez says big sponsorships, like ones from NASA, make for pretty steep competition that can feel like a David versus Goliath matchup. But win or lose, she says the benefits are
the bonds that they create and them realizing the potential of what they're able to do. Some of them come in here not even knowing what the difference in screwdrivers are, and they're functioning with all these major tools, and it's great to see them get so confident with the abilities that they developed over the time that they've spent on the team.
18-year-old Marcos Ibanez has participated in the robotics competition since his freshman year at Harmony. He says through his recent role as the team's captain of engineering, he's learned about mentoring and teaching. And next week, as the Devastators head to their first rounds of regional competition in Louisiana, those skills will be put to test in an environment that Sindha, Ibanez, and other team members call fast-paced.
You wouldn't think it'd be that intense because it's robots, but I mean, it does get really intense. Like, it makes you scared at some points. This makes you shake.
So it's nothing like going to like a game on Friday night or anything like that.
Like game on Friday nights, they stop and you know, kind of goes on for a little bit. Here, it's intense throughout the entire competition. And you're working constantly from, you get there at 9 maybe, and you don't leave until sometimes 6, 7 if you want to work extra. I think that's almost a full day of just nonstop work.
Back at Harmony, younger kids watch wide-eyed at the team's demonstration. Catching the balls, Impulse shoots into the air. Sindha says moments like that make the work worth it, from the late nights spent building to the long days during competition.
We have kids of all ages come up to us saying, whoa, where can I buy one of these? And we're like, I'm sorry, you can't buy it, but if you join a robotics program, you can totally build one day.
Next, we'll stop by the Greater Advanced Manufacturing Academy, or GWAMA. The school is based out of Waco ISD, but has partnered with several other school districts in the area as well. Since opening its doors in 2013, enrollment has steadily grown. The school's administration sees this as a sign that vocational education is gaining favorability once more. The high school juniors and seniors that attend the academy learn about things like robotics, electronics, and can even get welding experience. It's 8:05 a.m., and the first bell of the day rings throughout the halls at the Greater Waco Advanced Manufacturing Academy. The halls are filled with some students shuffling their way into first period and some teachers ushering those kids into class. But by this time, 17-year-old Bridget Wafer, a senior at Riesel High School, is already in math working on the day's assignment. Like the other students that attend Guama, Bridget comes from one of 14 partnering schools, some as far as 60 miles away. During the school's two-year programs, these students learn about things like electronics and robotics, or acquire trade skills like welding. They can even take their math and science courses here. The chemistry class has a metallurgy component to it, so kids learn what happens to metals when they're welding them. But Bridget is here for robotics. She says ever since she was a kid, she was fascinated by the world of wires and artificial intelligence.
I've always wanted to build robots since I was little. I've always, when I was younger, they made us do a project, and my choice was to build a fake robot that would do everything for you.
In her robotics class, Bridget has continued that childhood dream. She's learning to program Neo, a humanoid robot which the students at Guama have affectionately dubbed Ditto.
Congratulations on your first interactive application. Let's hope you will do a lot of them so we can do more and more things together.
This is all part of a day's work for Bridget and the students at Guama, from programming the movements of robots to building rockets that will launch 800 feet into the air. Quick side note, the students are launching these rockets at SpaceX. Yeah, SpaceX. Pretty cool, right? Okay, back to the story. The need for these types of vocational skills is what led the Waco business community and education circles to establish Guama in 2013. The school's assistant director, Dustin Davison, says the school helps students to develop those sought-after labor skills, and in doing so, also addresses another pressing community issue, poverty.
We really feel that we are affecting a community because we are training students to possibly go out and get that better job than what their parents have. And we are changing that poverty level, you know, one kid at a time, really, and giving a student every opportunity that they can.
The cost to attend Guama is covered by a student's school district. Throughout the Lone Star State, districts are eligible to receive extra funding for students that are in approved Career and Technology Education, or CTE, programs. According to the Texas Education Agency, districts receive 35% more funding for students enrolled in CTE programs than for students that aren't. Additionally, the appeal of CTE courses were bolstered by House Bill 5. You may recall HB 5, which the Texas legislature passed in 2013. The bill changed graduation requirements for Texas students and did away with some end-of-course assessments, too. But it also required students to earn a quote-unquote endorsement in a specific field, like STEM subjects or public services or business and industry. This, Davison believes, helped to spur interest in career and technology education.
Our students are coming out of high school, and they have a long list of things that they can actually do, and that's something that's, you know, it's so important and crucial in the Waco area.
Back in her robotics class, Bridget is trying to program Ditto so it'll wave hello. When she graduates this spring, she and the other students in the robotics academy will leave with 9 hours of credit at TSTC. Welding and precision manufacturing students come out with 12 credits. For Bridget, coming here helped her realize what she wanted to do. She sees herself transferring these credits to TSTC, and she eventually wants to go to either Texas A&M or Tarleton State University.
See, if I had the choice to go back and change my decisions, I wouldn't. I wouldn't change anything. I like this program. It's what I'm passionate about, doing the robots and all.
After she packs up Ditto, Bridget gathers her books and heads towards the bus that will take her back to Riesel, where she'll go to her English class. But she'll be back tomorrow, working towards her future. And finally, we'll take a quick look at the potential future for some of the campuses in Waco ISD. It was just a few weeks ago that students across Texas public schools were taking the STAR test. The standardized assessment not only measures student performance, but the performance of schools as a whole. When a student fails these tests, there are makeup exams or second chances. But what happens if a school fails to meet educational standards? For KWBU, Avery Lill reports.
Okay, wonderful. Tonight is an action night.
Teachers, parents, and school administrators from a North Waco neighborhood sit in the cafeteria of Brook Avenue Elementary School. Everyone's been served enchiladas, beans, rice, chips, salsa, and dessert. But they're not here for the delicious food. They're here to discuss the school's future.
Turnaround plan for Brook Avenue, and then Dr. Jenkins is also going to take you through some initiatives for Indian Spring.
During the last Texas legislative session, Governor Greg Abbott signed House Bill 1842 into law. This bill says that any school that does not meet educational standards for 5 years in a row can be closed down. On top of that, if that happens, then the Texas Commissioner of Education can replace the entire school board and board of trustees. Two schools, J.H. Hines and Brook Avenue Elementary, have already failed to meet standards for 4 years now. However, they actually do have some time before the bill goes into effect. Pat Atkins, the president of Waco Independent School District, explains.
Although the statute says the commissioner shall close any school after 5 years, the compromise they worked out with TEA is none of this takes effect until the fall of 2018. So we're sitting here in the spring of 2016, and we've got about 2.5 years to really make a compelling case that these schools don't need to change, that it would have catastrophic effects on these neighborhoods.
But Waco ISD isn't waiting until 2018 to raise schools' academic performance. One step the district has taken is to form community transformational committees. At these committee meetings, parents, teachers, and other community members provide input on school development strategies. Because the district recognizes that different schools face different obstacles, they formed three committees, pairing schools that operate within similar communities and that are struggling to meet academic standards. The turnout, school administrators say, has been good, and most are optimistic that these meetings, in conjunction with other measures, will allow schools to improve educational outcomes. Sarah Pedrotti, principal of Brook Avenue Elementary, explains that transformational committees have a big role to play.
I really believe that these transformation committees are important, and they really are transforming the way the community communicates with the schools, and I think that's important. It gives us the opportunity to sit down, talk, open up those conversations, and really get the input that we need.
During the meetings this spring for Brook Avenue Elementary and their partner, Indian Spring Middle School, stakeholders in these schools have worked to understand the school's histories, identify the root of problems that the schools face, and come up with concrete solutions for ways to improve. Of all the things that have come out of these meetings, Pedrotti said that one thing in particular stands out.
One thing that our transformation committee really resonated with is that it takes a village, you know, and that was the theme that kind of, it just expanded that first meeting, was that the school can't do it alone, the community can't do it alone, we have to work together, and it really does take a village in order to be successful.
Brook Avenue Elementary, Indian Spring, and other schools working toward meeting academic standards met regularly, according to their needs and schedule during the spring. They will resume these meetings in the fall.
That was KWBU's Avery Lill, with a look at how Waco ISD is working to improve the standings of campuses that have struggled throughout the last couple of years. To hear this episode and past episodes of Behind the Story, you can visit our website at kwbu.org.